Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Are you into the secret histories of exorcisms, Christmas massacres, killdozers, and concert disasters?
How about haunted mansions, the Philadelphia Experiment, the Dorm of Death, or candy corn?
Then you're gonna love Ghost Town, a hilarious and sometimes not so hilarious twice-weekly podcast.
On Wednesdays, we discuss the secret history of an abandoned, unexplored, haunted, or mysterious place from anywhere in the world.
And on Fridays, we cover an amazing historical failure from any time in history.
Ghost Town is 100% safe and legal. We guarantee it.
It's also fun, spooky, and can contain a riot,
a massacre,
a murder,
or an arch deluxe.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
I'm Jason Horton.
And this is Ghost Town. And you can find Ghost Town wherever you listen to podcasts.
Everybody, welcome back to our podcast. This is Murder with My Husband. I'm Peyton Moreland.
And I'm Garrett Moreland.
And he's the husband.
And I'm the husband.
I just wanted to start off by saying thank you to everyone who listens and supports us. The comments we get, sometimes I don't even know what to say because I literally just can't believe that there are so many people who are interested and want to listen to these stories with us. And so yeah, you guys are so nice to me, and sometimes I just really can't fathom it. So I just wanted to say thank you. I was just thinking about it, and I just was like, I need to say thank you. Everyone's so nice to me.
I know, they really are. It's been so cool to see this grow.
I know, it's been awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Garrett, how was your week?
It was good. We've had a busy week, but we're excited to be here.
Yeah, I got my hair done.
Yep, you did.
I dominated Garrett in mini golf.
That is not true.
Garrett threw his back out at the batting cages.
That part is true.
We love mini golf. We go play mini golf by ourselves
all
the
time.
Yeah,
we really do love mini golf.
Well, only because I'm freaking good at it.
It's fun, though. It's super fun.
Yeah, I love it. Who wants to come play mini? Murder with My Husband mini golf night.
That'd be funny.
Every stroke we tell a story. It'll last 18 hours. I wanted to ask, do you guys have any suggestions from us that you guys want us to do, like, besides cases? I know that there's some podcasts out there that do that, so I was just kind of curious, like, is there any suggestions you want to see from me and Garrett that isn't a true crime case?
And if not, then we'll just keep doing this.
We'll just keep chugging.
No, but that is a good idea. If anyone has any suggestions for cases, for...
I think I just feel like I have a lot of friends now. More than I normally have, and so I'm like, oh my gosh, I just want to do something. I want to hang out with my friends. But I mean, this is hanging out with my friends, so I guess I should just...
That's funny.
Okay, so let's just get into it.
Okay.
I'm going to cite the sources for this week. There is a book called After the Eclipse, A Mother's Murder, A Daughter's Search. That book probably has a lot more intimate details about this case than I could find. So if you want more in-depth, check it out. I didn't have time to read the whole book before we did covered it. W2PCMS.com, archive.boston.com, pressherald.com, dailymail.co.uk, and truecrimediscussions.blogspot.com, and also normally... I know blogs can be a little iffy as a source, but this girl claims that she read the book that I was talking about. So I kind of took her word for, like, a little bit more secure than others. And then also there's a Forensic Files episode, season 13, episode 8.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait. But for there being a Forensic Files on this, there wasn't that many large sources, if that makes sense. A lot of them were just from the town itself.
Okay.
So I was really surprised that there was a Forensic Files on this and it didn't have more coverage.
Yeah, it's interesting.
12-year-old Sarah Perry is sleeping in her bedroom in the small town of Bridgeton, Maine, in the summer of 1994, when she's awakened by a noise. As she comes to, she realizes that her mother is arguing with someone outside of her room. Their house was small, a one-story, and newish, so it wasn't that weird that she could hear the argument from her bedroom. Sarah lays her head back down and nods off to sleep again. As sad as it is, according to truecrimediscussions.blogspot.com, who claims to have read Sarah's book, Sarah was used to her mom arguing with different boyfriends all the time, so she wasn't that, like, stunned when she woke up to an argument in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that weird to hear those arguments, so Sarah chalked it up to her mom arguing with her new beau and went back to sleep. Just a short while later, Sarah's awakened again, but this time it's not arguing. Her mother, Crystal Perry, is screaming so loud that Sarah knows something is wrong. She rushes over to her bedroom door and peeks out, but she can't see anything. She shuts her bedroom door and hunches down, listening. Crystal, her mom, is screaming no over and over again. Sarah hears the drawers in the kitchen open and what sounds like silverware being jostled. All of this followed by loud bangs. Sarah knows something is seriously wrong. Whatever she's hearing, it's not her mom arguing with her boyfriend anymore.
So she's just in her room, correct?
Yes.
Trying to...
Listening.
Okay.
After the screams and scuffle dies down, and she's 12. Sarah has been sitting in her bedroom alone in silence for a couple minutes. She decides that she has to get up and go check on her mom. She doesn't know if whatever's going on out there is finished. She quietly opens her door and tiptoes out, looking around for her mom. Sarah stumbles into the kitchen and discovers her mom lying on the ground in a big pool of blood.
Holy crap.
She cries out for her, but Crystal, her mom, doesn't respond. Sarah runs to the phone in the kitchen and tries it. But there's not a dial tone. She can't get it to work. Next, she tries the phone in her mom's bedroom, but it's the same scenario. It won't work in there as well. Sarah knows she needs to get her mom help. She doesn't understand what's happened. She's scared that whoever hurt her mom is still around, but she knows that she doesn't have time. She runs out of the house barefoot, not even taking the time to grab shoes, and sprints half a mile to the nearest neighbor's house. She knocks, she bangs on the door to no avail. She hits a few more neighbors' houses, but no one is answering. Oh, Sarah's no. freaking out. She continues on, running in total a whole mile barefoot in the middle of the night to the nearest building. It happens to be a restaurant where the owners live above, like there's an apartment above the restaurant.
Yeah.
And they let her in and they let her use the phone. Sarah calls 911 and tells them that a man hurt her mother and she's on the floor of their kitchen not moving. Tired, distraught, and confused, Sarah has done everything she could. She sits back and waits for word on when and if she can see her mom and what happened while she was listening from behind her bedroom door.
Wow.
Crystal Perry was a single mother raising Sarah. They had recently moved to the small town of Bridgeton, Crystal hoping to make a better life for her and Sarah. Sarah's father, Thomas, actually only lived 6 miles away from them, but was not involved in Sarah or Crystal's life. Crystal and Thomas had a volatile relationship after divorcing when Sarah was 3 or 4 years old. They would argue over child support, hence they did not get along, and eventually he just stepped out.
Mm-hmm.
Crystal got a job as a hand sewer in the local Sebago shoe shop, according to W3PCMS.com. She had made some friends there, and her and Sarah's life was really looking up. In some of the sources, Sarah claims that she calls back on this time before this night, and she claims just thinking that finally her life just felt secure and in place, and like everything was working out for them. Crystal had a new boyfriend named Dennis Butler, and Sarah just remembers this time of life as being a new start for her and her mom. When police arrived at the small white home after getting a call from a 12-year-old saying that she heard something bad happen to her mom from the room over, they are stunned. The crime scene was a bloody mess. It's quickly determined that Crystal Perry was no longer alive. In fact, she had passed rather quickly. Medical examiners determined that she had been stabbed more than 50 times while Sarah was listening behind her bedroom door.
Oh my gosh.
She had been stabbed so forcefully that the knife tip broke off and stayed embedded in her head, according to dailymail.co.uk. Someone stabbed someone in the head.
That is crazy.
Insane. The attack had started in the living room and escalated and then finished into the kitchen. The blood was everywhere. Immediately, detectives have a hunch that Crystal probably knew her killer. It was a crime of passion. 50 plus stab wounds is intimate and overkill.
50, you know how many? 50 times. Mm-hmm. That is a lot. That's crazy.
I know. So it looked as if the killer had tried to clean up. There were shoe prints in the blood going back and forth, laid out all over the floor. And I've seen pictures of a crime scene, and it is like a Saw movie.
Okay.
Like, there's just, it's everywhere. And the shoe prints, like, you can vividly see the shoe prints, the design, everything in the blood throughout the floor.
So he knew he was screwed.
Well, I mean, he knew he was leaving his footprints behind. Yeah. And this is 1992. I mean, it's not like we're in the 1800s here. You know, like, Forensic Files was running, I'm pretty sure. So, you know, Crystal didn't have shoes on at the time of the attack. So this was most likely the killer's footprints. And they were really big. Investigators found fingerprints at the scene, but they were so soaked in blood and smudged that they were completely useless. Upon analyzing the body, experts found that there were circular blood drops on Crystal's legs that, according to Forensic Files, are known as passive blood drops. This means that the drops are perfectly circle because they were dropped straight down from a source that was holding very still. If there had been a lot of movement or Crystal had been standing, the drops would not have looked like that. They would have been messy. They would have trickled down.
Okay.
This means that those blood drops on Crystal's legs belonged to someone other than Crystal. Mm-hmm. They had to have come from when someone was standing above her hanging, and then they dropped down onto her leg. Someone else had bled onto Crystal while or after she had died. Police discover that these drops made a trail over to the sink and then onto the counter all the way to the paper towel dispenser where they stopped.
So they think there's two people involved, correct?
No, they're just saying that this blood, all the blood at the scene they thought was Crystal's, just smeared all over the place, dropped all over the place. But because these drops were perfectly circular, and they had been dropped from above, there was no way that was her blood.
Oh,
so in their head, they're thinking, this is the killer's blood.
Oh, we have another blood sample.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is like huge, huge, because that is hard physical DNA evidence that puts someone at the crime. It's not circumstantial at all.
Yeah.
All right, you guys, Audible is your one-stop app for all things audio entertainment, from bestsellers and the latest releases to celebrity memoirs and gripping mysteries. Audible's library is brimming with countless genres to love and new discoveries to make. Dive into an unparalleled selection of audiobooks and explore exclusive Audible originals brought to life by top celebrities, renowned experts, and fresh voices.
As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Plus, you can enjoy unlimited access to a growing selection of audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts such as Murder with My Husband.
Honestly, I love Audible because I will get into a story while I'm cleaning or driving. Sometimes I get so hooked listening to a story, I just end up finding new places to clean or just end up sitting in my car, which drives Garrett nuts, but I'm out there sitting there.
New members can explore Audible free for 30 days. Also, this March through May, let Audible sweep you into a realm of intrigue and suspense with their mystery and thriller collection, featuring exclusive new thrillers from their best-selling authors. Their selection is designed to captivate and surprise, ensuring your heart rate remains as elevated as your imagination.
New members can try Audible for free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MWMH or text MWMH to 500-500. That's audible.com/MWMH or text MWMH to 500-500.
All right, we're jumping into an ad real quick. This is Shopify. I personally love Shopify. I've been using it for 7-8 years now since I've met Peyton. I've been using it for so long. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business.
Whether you're selling sleuthing supplies or marketing mystery merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms.
Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US, and Shopify's the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/husband, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/husband now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/husband, shopify.com/husband. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations.
Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching, so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. So I speak a little bit of Spanish. Okay, that's not true. I speak Spanish fluently for the most part. And Peyton has always wanted to learn a language. So she's actually started using Babbel and she's gonna use it the next time we go to Mexico. And I'm really excited to see how her Spanish is.
Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/husband. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/husband, spelled BABBEL.com/husband. Rules and restrictions may apply.
While investigators are excited about the possible blood splatter lead, they also look into the shoe prints. They end up finding a local store that sold the exact shoe that matched the prints left at the crime scene.
I mean, that's what I was saying about it being a small town. It would be so easy to find the killer.
Yes. Yes. So they end up finding the shoe. It was an Oak Harbor shoe. And this ends up being another great lead for them. They're getting some pretty hard evidence. Back in the lab, medical examiners find evidence of sexual assault on Crystal's body. Luckily, I mean, not luckily, but luckily for the investigators, they collect the evidence left behind because he did leave evidence behind.
Okay.
And so they have it in hopes that they can test it someday against somebody.
What's also kind of interesting is I'm sure a small town like this, I mean, this happens, what, once in a blue moon?
No, yeah. And the detectives that were on this case, they talk about how this is the case that stuck with them. Like all of them get interviewed and they're like, this was the case,
yeah.
You know, that case you always hear about. So with so much DNA evidence and physical forensic leads, police immediately start questioning and eliminating suspects. The most obvious suspect is Crystal's ex-husband, Thomas. Before the murder, Crystal had gotten into an altercation with Thomas's girlfriend, Joan. It wasn't a secret that Joan did not like her boyfriend's ex-wife, and when they ran into each other at a local bar, she made sure that Crystal knew as well. She had been actually charged with assault charges after the altercation, but they were eventually dropped.
Crystal or?
Joan.
Oh,
okay. So her ex-husband's new girlfriend runs into her at a bar.
Yes.
They get into a fight, and the ex-husband's new girlfriend gets charged with
assault. So she gets charged. Got it.
Yes. Okay. No. Yeah. Crystal doesn't get charged.
Mm-hmm.
But the charges do get dropped.
Okay.
Both Joan and Thomas claim that they were home with each other the night of Crystal's murder. But this isn't really a standalone alibi because of the history between the three people.
Like, yeah.
They're each other's alibis, and it's like, well, you guys could have been there together committing it for all we know.
Yeah, totally. It's kind of interesting, though, because it would be really easy to decide who did it because all they have to do is take his DNA, correct?
So, yeah. So it sparks rumors in the town, many people knowing the distaste that both Joan and Thomas had for Crystal and a lot of people suspecting them of being involved in the murder. Keep in mind, this is a small town. But before police could chase down the lead and test the DNA found at the crime scene, because keep in mind, that takes time and money. 12-year-old Sarah, the daughter, who was listening behind her bedroom door to the whole murder, comes forward with a shocking account. She claims that she actually recognized the voice of the man that was arguing with her mom the first time she woke up. And it was, in fact, 19-year-old Dennis Butler, Crystal's new boyfriend.
And how old is Crystal?
30.
Okay.
So Sarah wasn't surprised to hear them arguing that night. She had seen them yell at each other many times before. Dennis had actually pulled a knife on Crystal during an argument once, threatening her life.
Jeez, what in the world?
He was 19, she was 30. Many said their relationship was extremely toxic.
Okay.
With their only witness IDing Dennis's voice, police immediately questioned him about his whereabouts that night and dropped Thomas and Joan completely.
Yeah.
He claims that he was at his parents' house, but when police talk to his parents, they reveal that they have no idea whether he was there or not, also making his alibi unreliable.
That's interesting, because I wonder how many parents would have just said, he was here.
I know, right? I think you know what I'm saying? Like, you better have my back, bro. Yeah,
but I don't know. It's good they were honest.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right? So
maybe they just didn't like the kid.
Yeah, I know.
Should we just say no?
Maybe he was a troublemaker, yeah. But that's interesting.
So police also determined that Dennis wore the same size of shoe as the prints that were found at the crime scene, although they couldn't find that style of shoe at Dennis's house. Police immediately asked Dennis to take a polygraph. And I think that we have discussed this before on here.
Yeah.
But I will say it again, Garrett, if something ever happens to me and police ask you to take a poly, don't do it.
I feel like that's not really I don't know enough about that whole world right now, but nowadays that's probably not a big thing anymore, a polygraph.
So this is what I was going to say. They are inaccurate and everybody knows they're inaccurate, but police still use them. So innocent people fail polys all the time. If it comes back as passed, they will just continue investigating you and completely throw the polygraph out. Like, oh, well, they come back inaccurate, so we're not going to trust that. We're just going to keep investigating you. But if it comes back as you failed, like it's over for you. You probably just sealed your fate.
Yeah.
They use them if it works for them.
I wonder if they use them more as a intimidation method. Like, hey,
like, you want to get them under pressure?
Yeah.
But that's the problem is that if you put anybody, I would probably fail a poly because I'd be so nervous that it wouldn't read correctly. You know, like if I'm getting questioned for murder, how am I supposed to be calm?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Especially if I'm innocent.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just don't do it. Don't do it. I swear if I'm dead and you do it, I will haunt you.
Okay, imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. I have definitely learned as I've gotten older that fast fashion is just not it. High quality, versatile items that will last a lifetime are the only way to go. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14 karat gold jewelry.
The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes.
I have their silk skirt. It's washable. It's literally one of my favorites, and I wear it all the time. So indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/husband for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/husband to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/husband.
Okay, if you're like me, you probably care about eating healthy. I feel like we've all tried a million different ways to do that, but
McDonald's. Nah, just kidding.
But honestly, it became a no-brainer when I got my first Hungry Root delivery, and I have to tell you, I ordered Hungry Root.
Yep.
And then a week later, they reached out wanting to be a sponsor of the show. And I was like, good to go, because I already went on and ordered Hungry Root.
We seriously loved it. Before we were even sponsored and Peyton ordered it just because she wanted to try it, it was so cool. Like, it came in this box. There's all these different foods and they're healthy. They're good for you. There's snacks, stuff to make dinner recipes. It was amazing. The very first night we got it, we made our dinner and we both loved it.
Well, and it's really easy. You actually just take a short quiz and Hungry Root will get to know your personal health goals. And then they'll build you a personalized cart with all your grocery needs for the week and give you delicious recipe recommendations. So honestly, I can just go and pick a recipe, boom, puts all of it in my cart. It's crazy.
Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's got to taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients.
So right now, Hungry Root is offering Murder With My Husband listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/husband to get 40% off your first delivery and your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/husband. Don't forget to use our link so they know that we sent you. All right, you guys, this show is sponsored by BetterHelp. And I don't know about you, but when I've been hanging out a lot, going out with friends, dinners, maybe my social battery completely drains and I need to take a few days to have a breather. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need some time alone. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I'm a huge believer in therapy, and even if you're like, I just don't feel like I have much to talk about, I don't feel like I have all this trauma, you don't realize how much your body holds on to with stress and just unhappy emotions. It holds on to it, so it's nice to let it out and get it out. Keep your life in order, and that is something therapy can do for you.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/husband today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/husband.
So anyways, he takes his poly twice and fails both of them. Immediately, all suspicion turns on Dennis. Police are positive that they have found the guy. Obviously, they haven't tested his DNA against that at the crime scene yet because that takes time and money, but it's known around town that police have zeroed in on Dennis, her boyfriend.
I think we've asked this before on one of our podcasts, but does anyone know why it takes so long? Like, is the process really that long? I'm just curious.
So I had someone reach out to me who said that her mom was a forensic pathologist.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
And she was like, I'm gonna ask about the whole DNA thing, mm-hmm. but I never did hear back. And honestly, I could probably look it up, but I am more interested to hear from one of our listeners if they have like a first hand in that.
Like, why does it really take that long?
We both obviously don't know. And I would love to know, but I also want to hear from a listener and not have to look that up.
Yeah.
And I'm sure all of our listeners would like to know too. So if you do know, get on and comment or write us in and we'll tell on the next episode what we hear.
Or look it up and pretend like you knew.
Yeah.
That works too.
Yeah, and then get a free shout out.
Yeah.
So Dennis tells police, okay, fine. I will willingly give you a sample of my DNA because they didn't want to go through the process of getting a warrant because that also takes time. And he said, I'll give it to you on one condition. If you do come arrest me while I'm at work, can you please use the back door? Because I don't want you to embarrass the owners of the store I work at because they've been really good to me.
What?
Yeah. So they were like, okay. So police are confused by his request.
If you do come arrest me. Yes. That's so strange.
So police are confused by his request, but not as confused as to when the DNA tests come back and they don't match Dennis's sample of DNA.
Oh, wow.
So confused and convinced that they have the right guy, they spend the time and money to run the DNA again.
Okay.
But it comes back the same. DNA does not lie, baby. Dennis was not the man who left DNA at the crime scene. Dennis did not kill Crystal.
Okay, wow.
So completely shook, Dennis was the perfect guy for the crime. Investigators turn back to their original suspect, Thomas, the ex-hus. They ask for a DNA sample and run it against the sample collected from the crime scene and from Crystal's body. It's not a match. At a loss, detectives decide to run it against a database of known offenders, and it comes back negative as well.
That would be so hard, running the DNA and getting negative on both suspects.
Mm-hmm. This is such a good case with such good DNA for them. Uh-huh. And they just fell every turn.
Yeah, that sucks.
The town was frightened. There was a murderer on the loose. And from the look of it, it could be a random killing at this point. Like, everyone thought that the killer knew her because it was such an intimate crime. But all the suspects in her life, they've tested and it's not them.
Which is scary.
Exactly. Was there someone out there randomly hurting people, stabbing them 50 times in this small of a town? Which I'm going to say, let me tell you, the small ones are the ones you got to worry about. Okay. I'm just going to say it. So there was little progress made on the case after this. A suspect here and there, but nothing ever panned out. It was truly turning into a cold case. Police were frustrated. They had all the evidence in this case to put someone away without a doubt. but they just had no one to run it against. And you can't just run it against everybody. Like I said, it takes time, resources, and money. 12 years after the death of Crystal Perry, her murder was a cold case. But that year, in 2006, a man by the name of Michael Hutchinson was prosecuted for a weapon offense charge and served 6 months in prison for it.
Okay.
Because it was a felony, his DNA was taken and entered into the database. When submitted, do you know what popped up? A match. A match to a 12-year-old cold case. Michael's submitted DNA matched the unknown sexual assault DNA sample taken from Crystal Perry's homicide case back in 1994.
Wow.
Now, obviously, everyone involved in this case goes crazy. The magnitude of the calls, the call to Sarah, who had moved to Texas to live with family shortly after the murder and then went on to college. The call to the original detectives, who had let this case eat them for years. Back in 1994, at the time of the murder, Michael Hutchinson was 19 years old and lived in his parents' house only a mile away from Crystal and Sarah in Bridgeton, Maine. He worked as a mason for his father at the time, and there was no significant relationship between Crystal and him. When police questioned Michael, he admits that he was at Crystal's house the night of the attack, but not to kill her. He claims that Crystal and him were having a secret affair. They were in bed together when someone barged into the house that night. He went to check it out when he was hit on the head and knocked out. He claims that when he woke up, the attacker was stabbing Crystal.
Okay, got it.
Michael says that scared for his own life, he ran out of the house. So instead of like getting up and getting the attacker off her who's stabbing her, he just ran out.
That's just crazy that being that small of a town, he
wasn't caught.
Yeah, he wasn't caught or even questioned.
And he only lived not even 2 miles away from her.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So he never came forward, like called the police when he ran out of the house, because he says he was embarrassed that he left Crystal and Sarah to be attacked instead of trying to save them. Which, let me state, they didn't need a man to save them, but maybe a witness to help them out would have been nice. Hmm. But he couldn't handle the shame that came with running away, so he never came forward about it. When word breaks that Michael had been questioned in the murder of Crystal Perry 12 years later, his ex comes forward to claim that she doesn't think he could have done it. He had some drug and alcohol problems, and he did show signs of erratic behavior, but not enough to kill someone he didn't even know.
That would be a weird experience, committing something, and then 12 years later, it kind of showing up in your life. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because I think you're probably like, oh, it's in my past. Like, I mean, I've put that behind me.
Obviously, it's a little different because he killed someone.
Yeah.
But it's crazy to think that he probably just forgot about it and moved on.
Exactly. So people are skeptical of Michael's story, obviously, from the start. Number one, Crystal's bed did not look like two people were in it when the attack happened. One side of the bed was clearly still made. And in his questioning, he said, oh, we were both in the bed. But in the crime scene photos, one side of the bed is perfectly made and the other side looks like someone was laying in it.
Okay.
They knew there was one simple way to know if Michael was lying or not. They had more DNA. DNA that couldn't be excused by consensual sex within a secret relationship. Investigators test Michael's blood against the drops found at the scene, and it comes back as a match.
Oh, finally.
Michael Hutchinson was arrested and charged with first-degree murder. He doesn't confess, deciding to plead not guilty and stick to his original story and take this all the way to trial.
That's crazy.
Prosecutors present the night in question as such. Michael and Crystal knew each other casually. It was a small town, and they lived less than 2 miles away from each other. He was most likely high that night and knocked on Crystal's door, hoping to hook up. He used a ruse to get in, like, my phone's not working or my car's not working, can I come use your phone? Then tried to make a sexual advance on her. Mm. Crystal denied him, and so Michael lost it. They began to argue, which escalated to him raping her.
All because she said no.
Yeah, talk about a guy who can't handle a little bit of...
That's ridiculous. So, real quick, the little daughter, the girl Sarah.
Yes.
Did she just think that she heard the other guy's voice then?
Yes, because they argued a lot and she knew they argued a lot. So, you know, she's 12 years old. She wakes up, she hears arguing. She's like, oh, it's just the boyfriend, and falls back asleep.
Totally. Okay, that makes sense.
So after he rapes her, Michael, he grabs a knife and stabs her to death. Gosh. In the process, he cuts his hand, which bled like crazy, dropping the blood droplets over her body, and then ran to the paper towel dispenser to clean it up and dropped all the blood drops all the way there. When police first questioned Michael, they saw a huge scar on his right palm. And I saw the picture of the scar, and I'll post it on social media. It's a bad scar. Wow. Like, it's just the nail in the coffin at this point. Mm-hmm. It only took 2 hours of deliberation for the jury to come back with a guilty verdict. Michael was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Okay.
Cops admit in this story that they don't know how they missed Hutchinson, which is what you said.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not blaming them. It's just that sucks.
And I like that they admit to this, because too often do we see detectives and any investigators, anybody, even prosecutors, judges, who won't admit to the fact that they had the wrong person. Mm-hmm. Even if the right person comes to play, they'll still be like, oh, well, you know, like, I know, you know, they won't admit that they made a mistake.
Yeah.
And these guys didn't put the wrong guy in prison, thankfully, but they were like, we should have known. We should have known. He lived less than 2 miles away. We never even questioned him. The town was so small. Like, they've admitted we shouldn't have missed him.
Good thing he's caught, though.
Exactly. Sarah, the 12-year-old daughter, is now doing amazing. She's so strong. She wrote that book that I mentioned at the beginning, and it's been acclaimed all over. It's won a bunch of awards.
Oh,
it's,
really?
It's about her process of listening to her mother's murder and then going to get help, and then how that affected her mm-hmm. and built her into who she is today.
Good for her. That's
and,
awesome.
Yeah. And so she, according to W2PCMS.com, Sarah says that she remembered her mother as someone who always maintained hope and was full of joy, despite being a struggling single mother. She says that she got her strength from being so connected to her mother. She says, to see her life tragically ended after having worked so hard, I did have this mentality of wanting to continue her project, which was to lift me up and make sure that I had an easier time in life than she had. And I really didn't want this person to have ruined that for her. And she did that. She went on. She went to college. She's now living in New York. She's like doing amazing, became an author, writing these books.
That's awesome.
And so, yeah, ultimately, she's learned how to grow from this tragedy, and justice was served. He was put into prison. And that's the story of Crystal Perry, the overheard tragedy.
Dang, we've done what, like 20 of these now? Mm-hmm. And I still just can't. I'm sure a lot of people think this. I just can't comprehend how you can just kill someone.
Stab someone in the head.
You can be that upset and that angry that you just...
For what? Because you got declined? Someone.
And like you said, not only was she just got stabbed a couple of times, 50 times. That just blows my mind.
Yeah.
That's just and horrible.
To think of a 12-year-old sitting in the fetal position behind her door.
Yeah.
Going, what the heck is going on out there? I hope whatever's going on doesn't come in here.
I'm so glad, though, that Sarah was in her bedroom and didn't come out during it.
Yes.
You know, it just seems like...
Yeah, blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
Well, because I feel like if he had seen her, he probably would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
My that's guess, a good point. My guess I didn't think about that. He didn't know her that well. They'd never talked that people know of. He probably didn't even realize there was a 12-year-old girl in the house.
I didn't even think about that. That's a good point.
And I think if she had made noise or come out or done anything, he would have hurt her too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, she's just strong all on her own to sit there and listen to that and then come out and go, I don't have any time to spare. I don't get to be scared if this guy is still in the house. Like, I have to go get help.
Yeah.
At 12.
There's a lot of these stories where the victims or the people that are involved in the cases are just
champs.
Yeah.
I know. It just makes you question, like, I don't feel like I could do it.
I don't know. Yeah.
And I'm so impressed by these people we talk about, even the victims who don't make it.
Yes.
I'm still impressed by their strong behavior and the way they will themselves, you know, just to fight through something that should never have happened to them. And that's totally horrific.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's the story. Go ahead and follow us on social media. We're at Murder With My Husband on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, even TikTok.
we've tried.
I'm not gonna say it's super successful. But
if anyone has any good ideas for, I don't know, TikToks that I guess we could do, let us know.
Yeah, we post on social media all the time. I think we're almost at 700 followers on Instagram.
Oh, we hit 701 as I was walking into the room. Yes!
Thanks for coming. Thanks. It makes me so happy to have everyone on there and to just feel like we are growing this little community of whoever you are. I mean, we've gotten a lot of comments of, I've seen a lot of comments of other women who are like, my husband hates true crime. And now it's like amusing. I can actually play it because it's amusing to them to listen to Garrett and be like, oh, he hates it too. Maybe it's more normal than I thought.
I know if we ever, you know, I'm thinking big here, obviously, but if we ever get big, all the people who hate true crime, they can come sit with me and we can just indulge in it together.
And all of us lovers with such good, happy souls can come over and we can just discuss it.
That's so funny.
Not to like put your side to shame or anything.
No, I know what you're saying.
No, it would be awesome. I mean, I don't know. I feel like I have this little dream that like, someday we could do a live show and everyone could come and hang out and talk about this, but.
Oh, we have 700 followers. So.
We're on our way.
If we can get all 700, then I think we're good.
Hey, look, Ma, I made it.
That's funny.
But we do have a couple male listeners that are intrigued by this. Well,
everyone loves true crime. Well, everyone. A lot of people love true crime.
Here's the thing is, true crime has been something that people have been interested in the beginning of time. Literally, we used to watch people kill each other.
Yeah, like gladiator days. No, it totally makes sense. I definitely understand.
I'm not saying it's great. I'm just saying that people have always been interested in human behavior. And I think most of us listening are interested in human behavior. We're not like, oh, we want to go kill people. We're interested in why people do what they do. And so why do people do these horrific, unthinkable acts? And that's not weird.
Yeah.
I'm happy that I finally have a place now with all of these people on our social media where it's like, we're not weird. It's not weird that CSI is my favorite TV show, you know, like it's totally acceptable.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the story of Crystal Perry. And everybody share on your Instagram or on your social media, share our podcast. Okay. I love it.
And I hate it.
Goodbye.